Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
I don't think that there's any one thing in this world that would make me happy or feel fulfilled. Like, I have to do all the things I'm interested in.
Okay, Patrick, yesterday we talked with Andy Sullivan of Airport 77s, and that was a delight.
It was.
And we want to mention again, Suburbs Fest is coming up, and that first night, Thursday, September 28th, is just going to be a fantastic rock and roll blowout.
Yep.
The likes of which few have seen before. Your life will be divided, really, in two parts. Before the rock and roll blowout and after. That's how you'll be able to look at your life from that moment forward. So here we are on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we have with us today Mary Jo Mattea from the band Dear Daria, also part of the Rock and Roll Blowout. Welcome, Mary Jo. How are you today?
Doing okay. It is a Sunday morning. I've got my iced coffee, getting some laundry done. It's good start to the Sunday.
That's right. Absolutely. So I want to, we're here on the Zoom. The listeners can't see this, but I want to show you guys something here. This is how I became aware of Dear Daria, from this little event right here.
Yeah, there you go.
It nice, was Jim. Woodmore Stock. Listeners of the podcast will remember we were at Woodmore Stock. And we did a bunch of interviews there. And I was hanging out with one of the guys who organizes it and just so happened to be right on the front lawn of the porch, the house with the porch where Dear Daria was playing. And I was like, oh, we got to get these guys.
Yeah, they're absolutely
perfect. They're perfect for us. So was that a fun show for you?
That was an amazing show. We loved Woodmore Stock. It was so much fun.
What's it like playing on a front porch? Had you done that before?
We hadn't. I've done a few porch fests as a solo artist before, and that's obviously a little different. I think the weirdest thing about playing on a porch is that you're all in a horizontal alignment, and that is never the case on any stage you're on. Like, even at Pie Shop, which has like a relatively small stage, like you're still, there's a drummer in the back, you know, and
right.
And there's some staggering of everybody, but never before have we just been 1, 2, 3, 4 in a horizontal line.
Well, you sounded great. So no one would know if it was disorienting at all.
Yeah, I was going to say on that point, Mary Jo, when Dear Daria practices, do you guys, because I'm in a band and we're going to play with you guys on the Thursday night of Suburbs Fest. But it's funny, when we practice, we are just a trio, but the bass player and myself, we're facing the drummer. So right. We're all kind of looking at each other. I wonder, do you guys do the same thing?
Yeah, we're usually more in like a circular configuration facing toward the center. But that's never the way we perform.
No. But it's funny that you say that too, because you're usually like, I can look at each other and see if somebody's made a mistake or they want to change something or they want to slow down or speed up. But you're right. When you play live, sometimes you do not have that visual communication.
Yeah.
That's can be helpful.
I think all bands do that, don't they? All bands rehearse in a circle.
Yeah.
And face each other. And then when they perform, of course, they're set up to face the audience. And unless you're spiritualized, as I recall, they play in a circle. But
sitting down. Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's get to Dear Daria here. So I know, Mary Jo, that you performed as a solo artist for some period of time, and now you're in this band. So tell us a little bit about how that came to be.
That all came to be actually even before the solo project. My first big project when I was in D.C., was actually a duo, like a grungy garage rock duo called Two Dragons and a Cheetah. And the other guy in that band moved away. And I was like, well, I still want to do music. I guess I should start just doing it under my own name. But I had to get, you know, bandmates to play with me. But we weren't using any sort of formal band name. It was just my name. And over time, the group, you know, people came and went, but like the group that was the most recent iteration was doing a lot more co-writing, and it seemed a lot more collaborative than it was like me plus a backing band. And we had made this decision that we were like going to rebrand and call it something else. But we, of course, made that decision shortly before the COVID pandemic. And so we didn't really have a great opportunity to roll it out. But we were like, you know what? Let's just do it. We're just going to go ahead and announce to people this is who we are now. Follow us, like us, etc. But it's more or less the configuration of the most recent iteration of the Mary Jo Mattea band is Dear Daria, with one exception, which is we have a different drummer now.
Okay. So would you say the music then is fairly similar between those two?
I think that there's the last Mary Jo Mattea EP and the Dear Daria record are very similar. Like the Can I Be Frank album that we put out, I think is easy. It's the same four people. It's the same four songwriters. The EP that we're working on right now, I think, is going to be a little different. And part of that has to do with the fact that Dan is our new drummer. But I think it's more to do with just, you know, we've had some time and a pandemic to kind of evolve what we're what we're working on. Okay. But I do think that the last Mary Jo Mattea EP, what was that one called? The Other Side. And then Can I Be Frank could more or less be like companion pieces.
Got it. So even when it was Mary Jo Mattea band, it was fairly collaborative. It wasn't what people would necessarily think of as like a solo artist working with backing musicians, right? It felt more like a collaborative band.
It started out as a solo musician with a backing band. And then over time, and as lineups changed and the people who were involved, I guess, wanted to be more collaborative, and I was open to that, it sort of evolved that way. It didn't start out that way, but it evolved that way. And then it got to the point where it was like, well, this is no longer just Mary Jo Mattea. Why are we calling it that? So that was really the justification behind the name change.
How is it? Which do you prefer? You prefer being in a band?
Yes. Hands down.
And why?
Well, first of all, like, shared responsibility. I mean, being the one and only means you're responsible for literally everything. You have to be on top of everything. And I've said numerous times, like, there are other people in this group now who like take point on different tasks. And I'm just like, oh, what a relief not to have to do literally everything. So I enjoy that part of it. And I also enjoy the collaborative part because there are ideas that I might never in a million years come to on my own. Mm-hmm. And that I might not even like at first taste, you know? And then over time and with multiple people kind of working on it together, it like changes your frame of reference, or it changes your mindset. And I'm really grateful to have that, you know, that when it was just Mary Jo Mattea, it was me walking in and going, hey, here's a song. We're going to do this, you know?
Right. Yeah. And that was the question I was actually going to ask you too, is there's got to be a different dynamic when you say, here's the song, here's all the parts, here's the lyrics, here's how I want it to go, versus here's an idea I have, mm-hmm. right? And then what do you guys think, or where could it possibly go, you know, that I didn't think of, or you guys might hear it differently than I hear it?
Exactly, yeah. And I think there's a lot more opportunities now where our guitar player, Joshua Hunter, writes a lick or a mm-hmm. chord progression or something, or has a treatment, and we'll send that, and I'll be like, oh, I could come up with lyrics and a melody for that. And so it's like, it didn't even start with me. It started with somebody else. But then, yeah, sometimes I'm just like, oh, I have like an outline for a song, like a chord progression and a melody and maybe a verse or two, but I don't have a bridge. And then they'll be like, oh, don't worry about that. We'll figure that out, you know?
Spends all day staring at screens, never knowing what any of it means. Robots fighting for your time. Ones and zeros line by line. Validate.
when it comes to playing live, do you still choose from both your solo stuff and the stuff you do with the band, or how do you guys handle that?
That's a good question. I think because it was the same group of people, there would be a lot of confusion if I performed sometimes as Mary Jo Matea and sometimes. So for all intents and purposes, the only time I ever perform as Mary Jo Matea is when I'm doing it by myself.
By yourself.
And
got
I'm
it.
Playing stuff that isn't just Dear Daria.
Right.
But in your Dear Daria sets, do you include older material as well, or is it just the Dear Daria stuff?
To date, we haven't, although I don't think anybody would be closed off to that idea.
Right, right.
I think we were actually rehearsing a while ago with our original drummer for a show. He was filling in with us because our new drummer had a show with his other band, because this is the nature of DC Nova MD bands, right? Like, we're all in like multiple projects. So anyways, our original drummer was playing with us, and we were all standing in the room and going like, man, remember the last time we were down here, we were working on for the last EP, and then we started noodling around with that, and we're like, maybe we should do that at the show, and we ended up not, but it was out there as an idea. We might.
A couple things real quick. First off, again, the listeners can't see this, but I'm watching on Zoom, and in the background, somebody's playing a video game.
Oh,
a video game happening back there.
My partner is playing Zelda. Is that distracting? Should I, like, Zelda. Move the...
No, it's fine. I love Zelda.
No, I kind of like it.
He's got his headphones on so that it doesn't bother me, and I got my headphones on so it doesn't bother him.
Yeah, there's a little adventure happening back there.
Yeah.
The place
reminds me of passing through certain rooms in my house when a screen will be on with somebody playing Zelda.
I guess, you know, we should get to this. Like, how do you describe your band sound? I mean, I think on a very, you know, sort of basic description would be power pop. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that works. I like this one, but some people think it's a little pretentious, which is if Lennon and McCartney grew up in the 90s, that's what it would be.
I've never heard of them. Who are they?
I like that. So
yeah, I like that. I also really am intrigued by the name of the band. So there's obviously a reference to a certain, time period there. And I have a very, there you go, a very important question that I won't ask you right away. But talk a little bit about the inspiration behind the name.
Oh, man, the name was an ordeal. We had a list of ideas that had, I'm going to say, over 200 ideas on it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it was like four people each contributing ideas. And then we'd like go through at random times and like everybody would be like, okay, vote for your top 10. And then the ones that made the cut, the rest would go. And then that we'd be stuck with those. And then it would be like, okay, let's go through these and see which ones are taken already. You know, yep. Which ones like we'd have IP issues with or anything like that. And so it was an ordeal. And I can't even remember how it came up. But Josh Hunter is the one who was like, what about Dear Daria? And I love a little alliteration. So that appealed to me. And then it also was kind of like pulling on this like nostalgia from our youth, which was, you know.
Right.
Mid to late 90s MTV. So, I mean, I was into that. And I think Eamon liked that it sounded like almost like an advice column, like Dear Abby, you know, that kind of thing. So he's like, oh, it's like you're asking, Dear Daria, let me ask you a question.
I like that too. Yeah.
I think it's great. And I got to say real quickly, though, naming is really difficult. And I get stressed out when we just have to come up with a name for our pub trivia team.
Yeah.
And we do that. You know what I mean? And but I will say this really quick story. I just we were just doing trivia the other night, and the theme of the trivia was 90s.
Nice.
So we like to try to come up with a name that fits the theme if we can, right? And I got the winning name finally. Vandalay Industries.
That wins. Yeah.
Was our team name.
Yeah.
That's so that good.
Anyway, but also John Hughes, you have a song called John Hughes.
Yep.
Now, here's what I found intriguing about that song. The song sounds like it. Like, just sonically sounds like it could be in a John Hughes film.
Close your eyes.
Yeah, that one was one of the ones that started as a Josh Hunter created this idea with like a guitar riff and the tones on the guitar riff or whatever. And he will just like give these things like weird throwaway titles. And I don't even remember what the throwaway title was for this one, but every so often, like if I'm like searching for inspiration, I'll go to the folder with all the ideas that he's uploaded and just listen through them and go, which ones speak to me. And I listened to that one and said, gosh, this sounds like it should be in a John Hughes movie. That was exactly my reaction. And so I kind of went from there as far as like the lyrical content. And so the lyrics are all like sort of archetypal things from John Hughes movies. Not necessarily like any one particular film, just the whole John Hughes universe and vibe.
Yeah, no, it totally works. Do you have a favorite John Hughes movie?
That's a good one. Maybe Ferris Bueller.
Oh, yeah. Huh?
But also Breakfast Club.
Patrick, do you have a favorite?
Boy, I love them all, actually. I'm kind of a closet, not a closet fan. Do you guys remember the movie Uncle Buck when John Candy plays? Yes. That's a really good one. I like that one a lot, one. Too. Yeah, yeah. It's got a lot of funny lines in it.
Well, speaking of John Candy, I just not too long ago rewatched Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh,
and
there you go.
That movie holds up.
It really does.
It's just as funny today as when it came out. Absolutely. Now, another song I wanted to ask you about, Mary Jo, is, well, let me just say it this way. If I knew nothing about Dear Daria, and I just, you know, listened to your album, which is called Can I Be Frank? Right? Okay. Listen to that album. I would peg you guys right away as a band from the Mid-Atlantic, because no one else would write a song about Delaware. So where did that come from? I mean, it has, right? It's like Delaware is such a, like, no, like around the country, people forget, I think, that Delaware even exists, right?
Poor, but
around
Delaware. Here,
it's like, yeah, I know. But around here, it's a big deal, you know, I guess because of the beaches, right? But yeah, people love Delaware.
Delaware, I mean, this is the sausage making coming out right here, is almost bit by bit a Wayne's World homage, because of that one. There was this scene, for those of the listeners who are unfamiliar with this movie, it's about two guys who are making a cable access show out of their basement. Definitely like too old to be living at home with their parents kind of guys, but they think they're cool. And they get an opportunity to bring the show to the next level. And they're in a proper studio, and they get like green screen technology and are like, ooh, look at all the things we can do with this. And then they put up images behind them of like big cities, and they have like New York, and they have like Dallas, and I don't know, LA or something. And then they're going through them and going like, oh, we can go all around the world. We can go here, we can go here, and we can do this, and we can do that. And then an image pops up behind them that just says Delaware. And they're like, or you can be magically whisked away too. And then they look and they're like, Delaware. Hi, I'm in Delaware. Like, because they can't come up with anything else to say about it. And as a band, every time we would go to New York and back for some kind of show or run of shows, every time we went through Delaware there and back, it was, hi, I'm in Delaware. It was just like a band joke. We all loved Wayne's World. And on one of those trips, I was like, guys, I'm going to write a song called Hi, I'm in Delaware. And they're like, okay, let's do it.
But, I love that.
But now it does sort of become like every so often there's somebody at a show from Delaware who's like, nobody ever writes songs about Delaware, and they get really excited about it. And that makes me happy.
That's great. It really is. And it's the first state of the union, too. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's very small, and there's no sales tax. So there's a lot of reasons to
very small
about Delaware. Yeah.
I believe there are only three counties in the entire state.
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
It's a big deal around here, as I mentioned, because, you know, people go to the beaches in Delaware, mm-hmm. and that's very, very popular around this part of the country, to go to
every
the Delaware
summer.
Beaches
yeah.
in the summer. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful. They're fabulous. Your day job, you work as a social scientist.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Being kind of a dumb guy. What is a social scientist exactly?
Social scientist is sort of a catch-all term I use to describe myself, only because my educational background and then various career work has really spanned a large arena, and it's all within the social sciences, which is why I'm like, I'm a social scientist. But I have a doctorate in educational theory and policy, but I've also worked in sexual and reproductive health, education specifically, and health and human development. And right now I'm actually working for the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine in the office that coordinates peer review. So now I kind of get to like work on literally everything within the sciences, broadly speaking. Wow. Though I'm not, obviously not an expert on anything outside of my own little domain. But as the person who kind of coordinates peer review, I'm not the peer that's doing the reviewing, you know what I mean? So I just have to be the one that understands how like science works and how good reports are written.
Okay, so how does your work influence your music, or conversely, is your music sort of an escape from that world?
I think that there is definitely some crossover in both directions. I've often said that I can't tell the direction as far as if being a performer has made me feel more comfortable with like public speaking and work, or if public speaking and work has made me feel more comfortable on a stage as a performer. But there's definitely some sort of interaction effect going on there. See, now you're having me using like social science terminology, interaction effect.
No, I like that.
And then I also think that years of project management experience has really helped with organizing schedules and division of labor for musical projects as well. And so I think there are these like transferable skills that go back and forth. But I've often said, like, I don't think that there's any one thing in this world that would make me happy or feel fulfilled. Like, I have to do all the things I'm interested in. And so science is one of those things, and music is another of those things. And as you, I don't know if you were recording at the time when you mentioned it, but Zumba is another one of those things. So I have, I have varied interests, and I just don't feel like I should have to compromise on any single one of them.
No, that's great. That's great. Yeah. So you also work as a Zumba instructor. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't know what that is, what is Zumba?
Zumba is a dance fitness program that usually is centered around like international music.
Yeah. Okay. I only know it because they have a class at the gym that where I belong to. And it seems like something I avoid. So I don't really know. Yeah. Is it pretty intense? Zumba?
I think it's as intense as people make it. I'm a strong believer that literally anyone can do it at any level that is good for them. I've done it when I've had like wrist braces on and things like that, like from injuries. And I'm like, you know what? You just modify. You make it work for you. I have a lady in my class who has a recurring knee issue. And so she just wears her knee brace and makes sure that she doesn't twist herself any certain ways. And you make it work for you.
Have you done Zumba, Patrick?
No, I'm like you. I've avoided that. It looks very tiring.
Like, well, that is true. It is tiring. I will say that.
You said there's music involved with Zumba class?
Yeah, there is.
What kind of music is that?
It's I think according to the Zumba formula, your classes have to be comprised of at least 60% world and international rhythms. So you can't jam-pack a class of all American-made music. That wouldn't be Zumba.
But you can have.
You can, some. Yeah, you can have some, for sure.
Okay, so do you ever play your own records in your Zumba class?
I actually have a practice of doing what I call local music cool-downs. So I choose different artists from the greater Washington area every week and play a different song in my class and tell the, I mean, I do virtual classes, so for them it's less relevant, but for the people who I teach in person in DC, I'm like, and if you liked that song, you could go see that band next week at X venue. Oh, wow. Like, I use it as an opportunity to sort of be a liaison to the local music scene to people who might not be exposed to it otherwise.
Very cool.
So yeah, so I have played my own stuff, though I don't do it all the time. I think that might be a little too you know, gratuitous self-promotion of me.
So what's that, so that's what's that term you used before about integration, or what was it?
Interaction effects.
There you go. Interaction effects. That's what this is too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Patrick, is there a particular Wingtip Sloat song that would be good for Zumba that, that Mary Jo could put on?
Oh, I've
playlist?
Definitely played Airport 77s.
Yeah, Airport 77s.
I've,
yeah.
I've played their stuff as cooldowns. And when I say cooldown, it doesn't have to be like super mellow or anything. Because we're just doing some like stretching and slowing down. Like it, as long as it's not, I don't know, there's some like intense metal really wouldn't work. You know, so right. there are some things right. that are definitely off the table, but mm-hmm. I've played very upbeat music in my cool down section before. So don't let the term cool down throw you.
It's interesting, Mary Jo, given how much you do and how much your mind must be active, do you have a songwriting technique or routine that you adhere to? Like, do you have to go in a quiet place and say, nobody come near me to write? Or are you always putting pieces together, you know, as you're going through your day and making notes of like, oh, this would be a good idea?
I do have a long list on my phone of both written and voice memo ideas that I
just as they come to you throughout the day.
As they come to me throughout the day. And mm-hmm. I also am a big fan of songwriting challenges. I found this one called 5 and 5 where the host of it will like announce, okay, coming, you know, September 1st or whatever, we're going to do another 5-day song challenge. The idea is every day she'll provide a prompt and you're supposed to write a song. It doesn't have to be a good song. It just has to be a song. You have to write a song.
Just do it. Oh, nice.
And there's 5 of them. And I actually successfully made it through 1 5-day challenge where I wrote 5 songs in 5 days.
Nice.
Since then, I haven't had the commitment. I think it was because it was early in the pandemic. And so I think I had a little more downtime to like devote nothing but just songwriting for 5 days.
Right.
But I do keep a list of all the prompts whenever she does host them. And I have written songs since from some of those prompts, just because like it's a good idea. Like when you don't have any like naturally occurring ideas, it's just like it puts your mind in a different place. And helps get the creative juices flowing, as they say.
I love that. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. Very cool.
Well,
very cool.
I mean, your story earlier about Delaware was kind of a challenge, right?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. And some of the songs on our current, or rather our forthcoming EP and also on the record were from songwriting challenges. Wish Her Luck on Can I Be Frank was a songwriting challenge. At least 2 of the songs on our forthcoming EP were based on songwriting challenges. So,
oh yeah, so let's talk about that for a minute here. So, okay, we mentioned the album "Can I Be Frank" that came out last year, mm-hmm. right? And now, so what do you have coming up?
We have a 6-song EP that we are in the mixing phases of, and that will be called Solastalgia, which is a term that Josh found. I don't know how he found it, but he found it and he sent us like a Wikipedia page explaining what it was. And it's this concept that kind of refers to homesickness while you're still at home. And nostalgia is this concept that refers to homesickness when you're not at home, or like, or longing for a time in the past when you're in the present. And solastalgia has more to do with like discomfort, that discomfort that comes with like things aren't the same and I'm still here. And it seemed like an apt concept for what everybody went through with COVID. And since a lot of the songs on the EP are definitely like COVID influenced, or COVID at least written during that period, we were like, yeah, this nails it. You know, it's like a really cool, it's a cool word too, solastalgia. So that's what's coming up.
So when will that be out?
I would love to know the answer to that question, Jim. once it's mixed, it'll go to mastering. And once it's mastered, it'll go to distribution, and then it'll be out. So it just depends on how long these various stages take.
Now, do you all put out physical product or just digital?
So far, just digital. But our drummer Dan is a vinyl addict. And I know that he will want to do a vinyl run at some point. I don't know of what, maybe not this in particular, but I think his heart will be broken if vinyl is not made at some point.
I'm on his side.
All right. I have one last thing for you, Mary Jo. I read somewhere that you, at one point, I guess, played in a Beatles tribute band.
Uh-huh, I did.
Oh, really? Wow, I didn't know that.
So which Beatle were you?
So it wasn't that kind of band.
Okay. That's what I wondered.
It actually started out as a duo, and it wasn't like one of us took one lyric and one took it. Just which was like whichever part was more comfortable for our voices, we would do, and we were just like an acoustic duo, cool. And we played a lot of bar gigs and things like that. And eventually, we got a drummer involved as well.
Can you give us? I don't know. Maybe this is just too impossible, but can you give us your top five Beatles songs?
My number one favorite is I'm Only Sleeping, which is off Revolver, which you just lifted up a minute ago.
Yeah. This is the coaster that I have. The Woodmore stock cup is placed on the Revolver coaster.
Nice. Yeah.
Anyway, yes.
I love that song. I don't think I've ever had to do a top five. I'd have to give that a little bit of thought, but that would be my number one.
Well, that's okay. We'll take that. That's a really good answer. We did a while back on the podcast, this is quite a while ago, we did a listener poll where we compiled a like top 15 Beatles songs from the listener poll. Mm-hmm. And number one was Rain.
Ooh, interesting.
Like our listeners are very cool. Like, we don't deserve that. We're not
so
worthy,
true.
I guess
you'd
say.
We are not. No, we are not.
Yeah. So anyway, okay. Patrick, anything else?
I just want to mention really quick, if listeners miss the Woodmore Stock episodes that we talked about, it starts with episode 1641 and goes through about 7 or 8 episodes. So start there and you can find them. Some great interviews, heavy editors, dot dash. We'll make sure to get Dear Daria on next time, of course, but we've captured them now. So just want to remind people of that. And that's where we came across some Dear Daria and Mary Jo's music. So
yeah, excellent. Okay, and a reminder that Suburbs Fest is coming up, so definitely head on out to the Runaway.
It's gonna be great.
Venue in Washington DC, Thursday, September 28th. Mm-hmm. And there you will see Dear Daria and also Airport 77s and Wingtip Slope. It's gonna be such a fun night.
It's gonna be epic.
And as Andy said yesterday, as you hear this, the food apparently is very good at the Runaway.
Oh my gosh, the food is really good. I highly recommend. Yeah. They have like this like fried halloumi sticks that are really good.
Ooh, we got to get there early and eat. Wingtip Slope doesn't eat generally before a show, but we may have to do it this time. So
may have to make an exception.
That's right.
It's going to be so much fun. Okay. Thank you very much. Mary Jo Mattea, thanks for joining us here.
Thank you, Mary Jo.
Thanks for having me.
It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you all later.
Please don't wake me, no, don't shake me.
Where do you stand on Home Alone 3?
I don't know if I've even seen Home Alone 3.
Oh!